On this Veterans Day, we have Mary Kolar, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs, on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Secretary Kolar leads the agency that serves nearly 364,000 veterans in Wisconsin, according to national data from the VA. There are almost 20 million veterans in the U.S. Are you a veteran? What issues are you facing today that you need help with? What questions do you have about how federal pandemic aid has reached veteran services and organizations? It's 800-642-1234. Secretary Mary Kolar, welcome back to the Ideas Network, and thank you for your service.
You're welcome, Kate, and thank you for having me on the show today. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Let's start at the veterans' homes, Chippewa Falls, King, Union Grove. I'm looking at the latest memos that came out this week. Visits are temporarily suspended at Chippewa Falls due to COVID cases with staff. King has 3 cases, all staff. Union Grove has 18, mostly residents, some staff. What do you think of the situation heading into winter?
I'm so glad you asked that, because I ask, I'm pleading, I'm encouraging, whatever I can do to encourage people, if you haven't been vaccinated, to get vaccinated. Those numbers that you've just read just highlight the fact that we have a vulnerable population, a population who live in a home and they depend on the staff that come in. We have a vaccination rate that's almost 100% at our Chippewa Falls facility. It's over 65% of our staff at our King facility, but it's much lower at our Union Grove facility. And I'm just, again, we have asked multiple times, we're encouraging, and I don't know if you're aware of, we are CMS certified. Mm-hmm. And so CMS is saying that before the end of the year, that staff must be vaccinated to be able to get the funding that we get from the federal government. So we, because of COVID positives and because of our anticipating losing staff when this mandate becomes a reality, that we have to limit the amount of people that we can have in our homes. So the solution to that is for everyone, but particularly staff who work at skilled nursing facilities like our veterans homes, to get the vaccination. We can see how we fought against this pandemic for so many months with the vaccines that are available. Now booster shots are available, and we are offering those to our residents and staff soon. So again, thank you for asking that. And I encourage everyone, please, to be with your families by Christmas time. Be vaccinated. Get the vaccination now, please.
Staffing, I wonder, in jeopardy here when I hear, you know, a lower vaccination rate among staff. You know, we've talked with nursing home administrators who are at the end of their emergency plans. They are in dire need of staff. And so yes. What is your staffing situation at the VA facilities?
So, again, at Chippewa Falls, we're doing fine. That's a contracted facility. We're doing pretty well at King. The one that I worry the most about is Union Grove. We have closed a hall, reduced the footprint, if you will, so that we can reduce the amount of staff that's needed. That's one way that we are doing it. And again, as I mentioned earlier, also not taking in new admissions. So between because of the virus, limiting the amount of people that we are admitting and reducing our staff.
Does that mean there's a longer wait list?
I anticipate there will be. We have a combination of factors that are impacting all skilled nursing, including veterans homes. What we have is a declining veteran population. Sadly, we've lost a good chunk of the World War II cohort. And so the demand is not as strong as it was in recent previous years at our veterans homes. So that is helping us, that the demand isn't as great. And also the federal VA is enabling and providing some funds to support caregivers so that veterans can stay in their own homes have occasional medical care.
Aging in place. From the
federal, go ahead.
Yeah, I was. What's that? I just said aging in place.
Correct, aging in place. I just met with, I was up in Iron Mountain recently and learned from my federal VA counterpart, the director of the hospital there, that even that's a challenge with staff because they do need medical people to go check on the people aging in place sometimes. So this nursing healthcare shortage that exists before the pandemic has made that much worse. So like other skilled nursing facilities, we are, like you said, doing everything that we can to adjust to current situations and prepare for the expectation that all staff will be vaccinated.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Mary Kolar, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs. You can join in. Are you a veteran? What issues are you facing today that you have sought help with? What is your situation in the pandemic? 800-642-1234. Let's move on to veteran employment in the pandemic. Veteran unemployment rate was 4.2% in October. That rose from 3.9% the previous month, according to Labor Department figures. What aid is being directed at helping Wisconsin veterans gain employment?
Well, I was really pleased that you had the introduction of a previous interview that I did on, with the Wisconsin Veterans Chamber of Commerce, and they just had their conference yesterday. So it just highlights the fact of government, public and private entities working together to focus on hiring veterans. I was also just with the Department of Workforce Development and the governor recognizing businesses that specifically focus on hiring veterans. And it's just phenomenal to learn from the private industry what they are doing as they focus on hiring veterans. So again, I just want to emphasize for businesses looking to hire employees who are prepared for hard work, accepting responsibility, being held accountable, working as a team, often extremely good management and leadership. So again, as was in the clip, it's all of us working together, government, public, private, nonprofits, to encourage veterans to take advantage of the services that are available to them, whether it's through WDVA or the Department of Workforce Development, with nonprofits who are focused. I was just at a Heroes for Healthcare event, and they focus on helping medics and corpsmen transition to healthcare jobs, which is just wonderful now with that healthcare worker shortage. So I can't emphasize enough to veterans and eligible family members to check out wisvets.com and 1-800-WISVETS to talk to people who can help them determine the benefits and services that they are eligible for, and also to help with employment and being prepared for that transition from being in the military to becoming a civilian.
As you watch this federal pandemic aid being dispensed to states like Wisconsin and Governor Evers, finding ways and programs to put it in, what is your elevator pitch, so to speak, to make sure that, you know, these dollars are getting into programs that have a really good return on investment for supporting veterans?
Yes, thank you. It's look at to see the application process and how your business or your program can use ARPA funds. We don't want to leave any of them on the table. They're available. I encourage people to apply and check it out and find out how they can be used in their specific, business or program.
Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs Secretary Mary Kolar with us discussing resources and services on this Veterans Day. How are you honoring veterans today? What questions do you have for Secretary Kolar? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We have the State Secretary of Veterans Affairs here on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. On a national level, VA Secretary Dennis McDonough told Military Times this week he's concerned about how to reduce benefit backlogs and address employee burnout.
Across the country, this is an issue. People are working really hard. It's really challenging. And it's no different for VA than it is for other hospitals and hospital systems and healthcare systems across the country.
Do you work for the VA? How is your workload? Can you keep up with case management and delivering benefits? Join in at 800-642-1234. Wisconsin Veterans Affairs Secretary Mary Kolar with us for about 9 more minutes. Secretary, there you heard Dennis McDonough, the VA secretary. What are your thoughts on employee burnout and the benefits backlog that he's concerned about?
Let you know that we, in Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs, and we're a part of the National Association of State Directors of Veterans Affairs. And so our communication with USDVA is frequent, you know, if it's practically every day, if it's not every day. And what we did recently with USDVA is sign a memorandum of agreement to do things, more things electronically. And I really believe that will help. We're making a long overdue transition federally to do more things electronic. We've been so dependent on paper. And so when you hear about that backlog, it is literally paper documents that are in an archive and human beings have to go find them. And so USDVA has been working to have all of those documents digitized. And again, then it helps us because with that agreement, we agree that yes, we accept them electronically. And, you know, just for example, I get documents, they're addressed to the Secretary of WDVA. And so it's like that's slowing down the process that when it's to an anonymous person by mail, instead it could go electronically. So that's what I'm very encouraged by, that there is going to be more electronic transfer of documents instead of this dependence on hard copies and having to have a human being go find that hard copy.
And so what I'm hearing is that through case management for veterans, there's going to be a more robust system for electronic records, for an electronic record system, maybe akin to the healthcare system or like electronic health records.
Exactly, which is another project that USDVA is working on. And hopefully this, they've just hired a new director for that initiative that has been ongoing and it has had some challenges. But yes, we need to get this activity accelerated so that we can more promptly serve all veterans and eligible family members.
We've seen telehealth, of course, expand in the pandemic. Do you see that as something that the VA is going to stick with even after the pandemic?
Yes, I do. That USDVA has been able to do the outreach to veterans, particularly those in rural areas like northern Wisconsin that don't have close access to medical care. So the VA, USDVA is actually helping veterans get the electronic devices that they need, the assets that they need so that they can connect with their healthcare providers. So yes, I see it staying and growing as we learn what works best and how we can best serve veterans. I'm very encouraged. At the same time, when you mentioned the ARPA questions, and Governor Evers just announced more funds that will be going to broadband, we need that broadband because that is one of the challenges with telehealth is if you don't have connectivity, it's kind of hard to do telehealth. But because, again, with federal government, state government, and local providers helping with that expansion, we will see greater success with telehealth.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Rachel is joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, so my husband is a veteran, and he transitioned from active duty to civilian life about 5, 6, 7 years ago now. It all blurs together. But what resources are available in Wisconsin to help those veterans and transitioning service members kind of find that camaraderie again, and their groups that, you know, can relate to the active duty to civilian life and kind of find, you know, that brother band of brothers, really?
Yes, thank you, Rachel, for asking that question. And I want to encourage, if you and your husband haven't already, to contact your county veteran service officer. Joe Alec is there in Brown County. I just saw him earlier this week. So find out the benefits and services that are available to you. And I encourage you to check out our veteran service organizations. There's many in the state of Wisconsin. Obviously, the big three, the VFW, the American Legion, the Disabled American Veterans. But find what works for you. I also encourage the nonprofits that exist throughout the state, where you'll find like-minded people who are out there to serve veterans and their community. It's been my pleasure as a veteran here in Wisconsin to serve with women veterans who are, you know, organizations focused on women veterans, veterans organizations that are focused on, again, helping veterans find the services that they need, whether that's education, employment, a roof, and, you know, there's many out there. And I recommend starting with the county veteran service officer. Please call 1-800-WIS-VETS to talk to our benefits center personnel. It's out there, Rachel. I strongly encourage you and anyone you know to take advantage of the many benefits and services that Wisconsin has. We're known for being a generous state. And so it only helps if you take advantage of it, though, so please do.
Rachel, thanks. In that transition, Secretary Kolar, to civilian life, there is a threat of PTSD being a major issue, stress management being a huge issue, affecting veterans across conflicts. And the VA says women veterans especially are more likely to experience some types of traumatic events that are associated with high risk for developing PTSD. What are you working on with veterans on the mental health front?
We, Wisconsin, are a part of a national effort called the Governor's Challenge. And so working with USDVA, WDVA, and nonprofits, we are working to find sponsors and mentors for people who are transitioning, to connect them with people before they even actually separate from active duty. And that is going to help, we believe, with taking on those challenges, the mental health challenges. But as I said, finding employment, finding a home, that's what's most stressful. That can aggravate PTSD and other issues. So that's why we want to make that connection before the person even separates from active service. That program is being implemented right now. And again, it's such a pleasure and honor to work with them, because it's all of us working together, USDVA, WDVA, and nonprofits and others, working to help people make that transition, to deal with challenges they may have, and to minimize those challenges.
Well, mental health services can be in short supply, especially in rural areas, getting in to see a therapist. Have you found, as you work around the state, is there a backlog? Is there a wait time for veterans to get access to mental health services or therapy sessions?
And sometimes there can be, and particularly with the USDVA, but it's make those phone calls. We will advocate on your behalf, the county supervisors or county veterans service officers, to make those phone calls. You will find comrades at the VFWs who will help, DAV, like I said, American Legion. There's people there to help. So that's what I hope everyone understands, that they're not alone. Please don't ever think that you are. There are people here to help.
In the last few seconds we have, homelessness, housing shortages we're seeing across the state. What are you doing in that area about veteran homelessness?
So we have a program called Veterans Outreach and Recovery Program, and there's 11 coordinators throughout the state. They go and find the veterans. If they are living under a bridge or in the park, they go and they find them and they help them with case management. And again, working with others, whether it's county veteran service officers or local nonprofits, to help them get the help that they need. Also, we have our Veterans Housing and Recovery Program that we have 78 people who are able to take advantage of our programs in Chippewa Falls, Green Bay, and Union Grove. It is to help them transition.
Secretary Kolar, thank you for joining us. Mary Kolar, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs. News update is next on the Ideas Network. For Native American women, breast cancer is the second most common death from cancer. We're discussing what can be done to address it with the head of the Ignace Indian Health Center on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. For nearly a half century, the Ignace Indian Health Center has been serving the healthcare needs of Milwaukee's Native American community. How important is culturally sensitive healthcare to you? Is it important that your doctor understand your heritage, your background, especially when battling a disease like cancer? It's 800-642-1234. Dr. Lyle Ignace is CEO of the Gerald L. Ignace Indian Health Center, member of the Menominee Indian Tribe of Wisconsin and the Coeur d'Alene Tribe of Idaho. Dr. Ignace, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Hannah. Thank you for having me.
What are your insights from your many years in the medical profession as you see Native American women battling breast cancer?
Yeah, this is certainly a devastating disease and certainly a surprise to all women who become diagnosed with cancer. It's come a long way. I've practiced in many different areas of the country, mainly around Indian health. And so it's never easy, not only to let someone know they have cancer, but also having to walk them through not just the diagnosis, but also the treatment options. So it's never easy. And there are positive stories that do come out, but they're always very devastating.
Why does the disparity exist with worse outcomes, breast cancer having more deadly outcomes for Native women?
So, you know, the principal part of screening is the early detection and prevention of breast cancer. And so it's important that all women of eligible age do get screenings as early as it's possible. And, you know, probably the biggest reason is the late staging of breast cancer, and that really starts with the screening. Unfortunately, Native Americans have probably the lowest rate of mammography screening than all other races and ethnicities, and so that can lead to late staging.
And when you say late staging, you mean a later diagnosis that cancer has spread, that cancer has progressed.
Yes, correct. Thank you for clarifying that. So that does lead for fewer options and more dramatic surgical and chemotherapy. And so that late diagnosis can certainly impact the long-term survival as well.
The program manager at the Wisconsin Intertribal Pink Shawl Initiative has said she's heard people call breast cancer a white woman's disease. And I'm wondering, how does that sit with you? How do patients' perceptions of the disease affect your ability to serve Native American women in Milwaukee?
Yeah, so, you know, there's always an effort to assure and present prevention and screening and how important it is to age eligible individuals. There's always discussions, good discussions, and we can always set people up. It is the hardest part between that discussion and actually having screenings done that make it so difficult, because there are barriers to scheduling someone to actually someone arriving. And a lot of that has to do with transportation. At least here in Milwaukee, we're dealing with a higher proportion of a Native population that is lives below the federal poverty line. So, you know, transportation is a big issue. And if they're unable to get that transportation to the simplest thing as a screening, you know, they may not show up. And so it becomes harder and harder to do that, to screen people.
I would imagine, too, that if you're living in poverty, your health screening, your annual health screening is a much lower priority than, say, keeping the lights on, keeping the rent paid, making sure that you can get to your job tomorrow.
Sure, absolutely. And it all plays into the successful rates of screening. And one of the things that we try to do to reduce that is to set up a mammogram bus at our location every 3 months. And so we try to schedule people around not just their routine health visits, but also try to get them set up for their mammogram on the same day at the same location. So it's just one of our efforts to kind of reduce one of those barriers.
Take us on the bus, if you will. What is it like, and how do you deliver those services?
So we have a partnership with Aurora, and you know, one of the buses, like your standard RV, is really big, and it has a waiting area. It has the mammogram set up, and it's parked outside our building, and so I've never been inside, but I hear it's nice.
Yeah, and this bus then goes into particular neighborhoods, or how often? How is it used?
Well, this is specifically set up for with the Pink Shawl and the Gerald L. Ignace Indian Health Center. So we coordinate our efforts to align and schedule our Native clients same day of routine visits with them, their mammogram appointment.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Lyle Ignace, who's CEO at the Gerald L. Ignace Indian Health Center in Milwaukee. Dr. Ignace is an internal medicine specialist, holds a master's in public health from Harvard School of Public Health. You can join in. Do you have access to breast cancer screenings? How do you know when it's time to get screened? Do you have trouble accessing these appointments? What's preventing you from getting screened? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Ignace, the literature has changed somewhat for who needs to be screened and how often. Remind us where we're at with that.
Yeah, so currently the current recommendations
Are you still there, Dr. Ignace? I think we're having trouble hearing you. Dr. Ignace, are you still with us?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Yes, I was just asking if you could help us understand when is the appropriate time to get a screening, a breast cancer screening?
So the appropriate times, I'm trying to recall the numbers. Give me a second.
Oh, that's okay. I wonder, as you bring those numbers up, one thing that the Ignace Indian Health Center has done is holding talking circles, and they're similar to group therapy sessions. What is the significance to doing these talking circles that, you know, for Native American women experiencing breast cancer?
Yes, this is really an important part of introducing culture and tradition, especially for Native women, in particular people who are survivors of cancer. This is really integrating the spirituality and the mental healing of not only the journey that women have to go through, but there's also people, you know, of similar background and maybe tribal background. And it allows for, you know, real talk, real discussion and spiritual healing and ceremonies that help women not just come to terms, but I think also come to peace and harmony and not only the diagnosis, but the treatment that they all can share together. So this is really important that we have a Native setting to help establish this.
I would imagine too, to realize you're not alone in this disease and you're not alone in this diagnosis and that you can share that with the talking circle.
Yes.
When you look at men and breast cancer screenings, what do you talk about with your male patients?
So, you know, like I mentioned, the early detection and prevention of cancer is extremely important for both men and women. Rarely, breast cancer does occur in men. So any abnormal, you know, bumps or masses that males may feel, that would, you know, certainly don't be afraid to bring this up, because in that rare case, it certainly could be a male having breast cancer. So that, you know, when you go to your routine visits, please talk with your doctor and be honest about all your aches and ailments, including any bumps or lumps.
We're talking about how Native American people battle breast cancer with internist Lyle Ignace, who leads the Ignace Indian Health Center in Milwaukee. Do you have access to breast cancer screenings? Do you know when it is time to get screened? Are you a survivor? What support was key to you as you battled cancer? Join in any point, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dr. Lyle Ignace here on the ADS Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about the effort to improve access to healthcare and support systems for Native American women who are going through breast cancer. Internal medicine physician Lyle Ignace is CEO of the Ignace Indian Health Clinic in Milwaukee and with us for about 10 more minutes. Dr. Ignace, I want to ask you about the clinic. You were right around 4 years old when your father, Dr. Gerald Ignace, established the then Milwaukee Indian Health Clinic. And today you've stepped into your father's shoes as CEO of the clinic. What have you learned from him? What has he passed on to you in medicine and in life?
Yeah, this is, so you're aging me a little bit, but I will answer there. You know, one thing about growing up in regards to my father is that he's been a tremendous mentor. He's always been involved in Native health, and so that was part of my growing up and being around not only individuals, other health professionals as peers and mentors, but you know, he has certainly helped enlighten me in how important health is, not only to family, but also to Natives. And that has grown into a love and a passion that I have in addressing health disparities in Natives. And that has been with me ever since I decided to go into medicine. And that has taken me to, you know, several places to New Mexico, working on the Navajo Reservation, to going back to school in Boston, going to headquarters and Indian Health Service in Rockville, Maryland, and coming back to Wisconsin here and bringing that home and taking all the knowledge that I've experienced and seen and being able to apply it for Natives here in Milwaukee.
He really stressed education to you.
It's really important. It always has been. Even with his father, education was the path to leading a successful life. And medicine became a passion for him as it has for me, and that's led us to being physicians, Native physicians for Native people.
One of the things he saw when he established the clinic in 73 were, he saw barriers, right? He saw people, Native American people, moving into urban areas, facing cultural, economic barriers in the healthcare system. And I'm wondering what has changed. Do these barriers still exist? What is most pressing to realize here as you look over the decades?
Yeah, so I would think back in the 70s, at that time, probably the biggest issue was access to care. We had individuals who, primarily lived on reservations, migrating to now urban settings. And as individuals get older, obviously, health conditions become more prevalent. And as a result, you need a healthcare service. And having insurance was also a big issue. So being able to offer health services and accessible services to a Native population that is uninsured or underinsured was extremely important, especially with the health disparities that existed that have continued to persist even to this day.
That continue to persist to this day. And I'm wondering, when you do have patients who lack insurance or who say, I don't know how to pay for this treatment. I don't know where to go from here in seeing us, the specialists, to getting the insulin, right? Or how to manage the high blood pressure. How do you approach those barriers?
Well, I think today, certainly with the Affordable Care Act and individuals being enrolled in state or with third-party coverage now, especially with Medicaid, that has helped our Native community greatly, especially with the ability to have access and be able to manage costs related to chronic conditions like diabetes, like cardiovascular disease. And even have the ability to see subspecialists now. And so that has changed, especially in the last, 5 to 6 years, and will have a dramatic impact, not just on the management and chronic care, but also long-term looking at improving Native life expectancy.
I want to pick your brain about the pandemic for a moment, because in addition to being an internist, you have that strong public health background. What insights have you gleaned in the pandemic about how we are handling COVID?
Yeah, so, as this pandemic has rolled out, I'm sure everyone is well aware of the impact of the elective procedures that were canceled early on. Once things started shutting down, hospitals started reducing their elective procedures, and that included prevention and cancer screenings. And so there was a huge delay and backlog of getting people back into the clinical setting to get these preventive screenings and mammography, colonoscopies, two of the bigger screening procedures. And that has severely impacted our Native community. I think at one point the rates for mammography for Native women was about 70%. With the pandemic, that has dramatically reduced, and some are estimating that maybe 10% of women were actually getting, Native women were getting their mammography screenings. And so now there's a delay, there's a backlog, and you know, that time segment that allows for this early detection now has been delayed. And could that mean progression of disease, cancer, to a later, a later staging or more invasive? And time will tell. We're trying to get people back into that normal healthcare setting, especially around screenings. And it's tough because people are hesitant to go back because of the pandemic. So so these are things that our facility is working on and trying to be proactive and engaging women everywhere we go to assure that they're screening, that if they are eligible for screening, that we can do that.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Lyle Ignace, who is CEO at the Gerald L. Ignace Indian Health Center in Milwaukee. The COVID vaccine, you were one of the first people in Milwaukee to receive vaccination. How have you been encouraging patients to get vaccinated? What are those conversations like?
Yeah, I think at first, I think I was probably the first Native physician in the state of Wisconsin to get the vaccine. I did it by a live Facebook and on December 15th. I remember that because I was a little nervous, but I was glad I had it done. But that's just one of those, abilities to lead by example. And if I could do that and do it live, I had no problem doing that, especially knowing the impact of what a vaccine could actually do and the benefits that it could prevent. And I've taken that message from there to, weekly town hall discussions to the Native community. And it really is about assuring that Natives of all age understand all of the information that is coming out. And it's a lot. And they understand not just the preventative approaches, but also the intervention of vaccines, therapeutics, and the impact on the Native community, not just here in Milwaukee, but in the state. So that was one part approach to our public health. The other was to set up campaigns specifically to vaccinate our Native community. So we held several campaigns back in February and March, and it was a really good success, and we're continuing to do that even to this day, and as well as boosters.
Dr. Ignace, thank you for your work. Thank you for joining us. Dr. Lyle Ignace, CEO of the Gerald L. Ignace Indian Health Center in Milwaukee, you're listening to the Ideas Network.